I'm joined now by Dr. Jimmy O'Day of the Union of Concerned Scientists and Andrea Vidari of the Warehouse Workers Resource Center to tackle concerns about and solutions for air pollution from the logistics industry as we turn more to online holiday shopping this year. So Andrea, I'd like to start with you. The pollution costs of the holiday shopping season has sort of become an annual conversation for the Inland Empire, but we're seeing, you know, record numbers of spending online now. And even SoCal, we saw news just this past week that we've had one of our worst smog years in decades. Can you talk about what's at stake for our community?
Sure. So yeah, you said that there's record sales happening right now, but I also want to point out that there's record like volumes of containers going in through the ports of LA and Long Beach right now. And so that those containers translate into going on the back of trucks or going onto rail lines and going directly into our goods movement system that happens to lie inside of communities, right? So the Inland Empire has seen a lot of growth of not only warehouses, but also the expansion of freeways and now talks about expanding rail yards. And these all exist within communities and disproportionately low income and communities of color. And so communities that live here have unfortunately normalized the health conditions of asthma and bronchitis and cancers. And, you know, we have children in the community that within their first year of life are diagnosed with industrial allergies, and health professionals respond and saying it's because of where you live. It's because of what you breathe in every day. And it's not so easy to just pack up and go, especially when, you know, it's even hard right now to find a job, right? Right now with COVID, there's all of these other layers of, unfortunately, inequity that make it harder for someone just to pop up and leave. And we also think about the growth in the region. It's like, where am I going to go to just another community that's also dealing with this? So the cost really comes down always to human cost, right? We're always talking about the cost of quality of life, talking about the cost of medications and the health costs that come with dealing with these things. So it's always about life expectancy and those health costs.
Okay, certainly. And so, Jimmy, I know you're joining us on break from a California Air Resources Board workshop about one of the solutions on the table, which would be this regulation that was passed this summer to get more zero emissions trucks on the road. Like, what can you share with us, you know, these many months later about how this can address these like public health issues?
Absolutely. Policies are critically important to changing this industry for the better. It's, you know, one thing for a consumer to choose a slower delivery time on a purchase, which will have lower emissions. But it's a whole other thing and far more critical, in my opinion, to have policies that affect the entire industry. So changing the vehicles that they're driving from diesel to electric, putting these health protective measures in place so communities in the Inland Empire aren't bearing the impact of the rest of the region's online shopping.
And then I know we're looking at target dates here of like in 15 years, approximately putting a certain number of trucks on the road. Like, what is that? That's a huge undertaking. Like, what does that look like? And like, what kind of challenges are we going to see ahead?
So the policy passed last summer by the Air Resources Board will result in about 15% of trucks on the road being electric by 2035. And so that's a great start in that it's 15% more than we have today, but there's also a whole another 85% of trucks that we have left to address. The goal really is to get every truck on the road to be a zero emission vehicle.
Okay. And so then reaching that other, you know, portion of the trucks on the road, how are we going to get to that point?
So it comes down to more policies. The policy passed last summer was a first step that it will require truck manufacturers to sell electric trucks, a certain percentage. And now we're starting to see policies that will require fleets to actually make that transition. And we're seeing specific fleets, delivery vehicles, drayage trucks that take cargo into containers to and from the port, and rail yards, refuse trucks, buses, all the many different sectors in the heavy-duty vehicle industry, specific targets for those industries is the next step.
So, Andrea, how is the community responding to this? Are there solutions that they're pushing for in addition to these policies that you're hearing that they're interested in?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had a lot of community support for the manufacturing standard because you need that supply of electric trucks. I think right now we're in this transitionary phase where we're now starting to, we'll hopefully be able to require the businesses that are in our communities to start transitioning and actually buying up those electric trucks. So I think it's very important to clean up the trucks that are in our communities already. Like that is absolutely a priority because of the impacts that it has right now. But outside of that, I think and it's communities all across the Inland Empire and also across the state of California, right? And the San Joaquin Valley and in the Bay Area, over in San Diego, who are also calling for a change in the way that they place these polluting sources, such as warehouses and rail yards. So every week, there's probably a warehouse in the Inland Empire that's going up for a vote, or it's getting reviewed through the environmental analysis. And every week, you'll probably find a community fighting against that, saying, no warehouse here. It's way too close to our home. It's a mile from the school. We have enough. What about the cumulative impacts, right? If it's rough, it could be a petition. It could be community members filling up a Zoom meeting now for the city council, or in general, just having this conversation and resistance against more and more warehouses being built. Because I think right now we have a really big problem to deal with, which is cleaning up everything that's existing. But then there's this like continued growth that continues to happen that community is calling for, you know, us to reimagine the way that we've set up our goods movement system to make it actually sustainable and stop placing it all in communities that are bearing the brunt right now. And this boils into like land use, right? We're really talking about where cities decide to put these polluting sources, and is this smart? Is this sustainable? I mean, we've got levels of service that are failing grades because I don't think anyone's taking a step back and realizing, man, adding 500 more trucks on this one road, does that sound like that's the best option? Because it, you know, we're just kind of saying yes to these individual warehouses and not taking a step back and realizing how we need to take a larger look at sustainability.
Sure. And you sort of touched on, you know, increased public involvement or community involvement in trying to, raise awareness to this. What's changed on the ground, would you say?
I think what's changed on the ground is that we do have more and more people disagreeing with the future of warehousing, and not only the future warehousing, but also critically analyzing, like, what does warehousing really bring into our communities? I mean, there are campaigns not only calling for the transition of the vehicles to zero emission, but also for the transition of the job quality. I mean, there are so many studies that are being done on these warehouses that show that, you know, these are unfortunately low road jobs. These do not like give a family a living wage. Many workers turn over within the year, so we're not actually getting those like career jobs that help with communities to, you know, build wealth and prosperity in their families. And so this is a really big part, because when warehouses get approved in our communities, the environmental report will always say this has significant impact. And the way to override it is always, you know, the council or the planning department has to say, well, we're going to override it with a consideration. And the overriding consideration is always jobs. And I think what's changed now is people are really looking into the jobs and saying, wait a minute, are these really the jobs that they're really offering us? Because right now, a number of jobs doesn't say enough about the quality of them. So I think that's what's changed. And communities have been called. Last year was a really big campaign to call for a community benefits agreement. Or you could even call it a community standards agreement, right? Putting a new standard on these developments that are coming in so that we're not given the short end of the stick, right? Land occupied, air polluted, and low wage jobs.
Okay. And then Jimmy, from a vehicle policy standpoint, what are you seeing as far as how the automotive industry is reacting to this?
Yeah, we've seen a ton of advances in technology. And so technology really is no longer the excuse. Vehicles with several hundred miles of range, costs are coming down. The state has done a ton of work to address really the whole gamut of costs, from vehicle costs to infrastructure costs, to really facilitate this transition more than anywhere else in the country or the world. And we still have a lot more to do. The thing about, you know, automakers and truck makers, there's a lot of flashy press releases out there, and I, you know, applaud the work that engineers and the teams are doing at these companies to really shift their business models. If they've been making diesel vehicles for, you know, a long time, that's certainly a change. But at the end of the day, you know, the rubber meets the road when electric vehicles are on the road and not polluting communities. And, you know, the unfortunate history is that it often takes policies and requirements, laws, to make those transitions, whether it's clean vehicles or, you know, clean source of electricity. The history really speaks for itself, is that ultimately requirements are what get, you know, what gets companies to change and provides the market for new companies to thrive. You know, we're seeing in California, and really a budding industry, I mean, maybe budding is not even the right word, a thriving industry for electric vehicle manufacturing, because companies know that there will be a market for these vehicles in the state because policies are in place and coming down the road.
So Jimmy, could you tell me a little bit more about kind of emissions standards and like what kind of output these trucks, these electric trucks versus diesel, their diesel counterparts would produce?
Absolutely. So an electric truck has zero tailpipe emissions. So if it's driving through your neighborhood, you will not smell any exhaust from that truck. But it is getting its electricity from somewhere. And we and many others have done analyses to estimate what the emissions are from generating electricity to charge electric trucks, electric cars. And in California, with our grid today, an electric truck is about 80% lower on a life cycle basis for global warming emissions compared to diesel. So it's good, it's excellent today, and only to get better as our grid gets cleaner with other policies.
Okay, and that should help California reach its aggressive emissions goals. Dr. Jimmy O'Day and Andrea Vidari, thank you very much for joining me.